Reading per se, and this has been recorded today, and we got a lovely speaker, Kaylee. So instead of a reading, I do a limerick for the person, which is so it goes. The speaker is a legend to me. She's from Ireland, and her name is Kaylee P. I first heard her on the Beyond Belief podcast. I wonder what's her opinion on Bookfest. I hope to meet her someday for a coffee or a tea. And I'm going to mute myself. Kaylee, as long as you want, about whatever you want. And thank you so much again for doing this.
Sorry. Can you hear me?
Alcoholic addict. And that was a good limerick. Thanks. I don't like Bookfast. Bookfast is really sweet. And I had many a night where I woke up not knowing where I was on Bookfast. So yeah, not so good. Yeah, so I haven't done a chair for a long time. I was just saying to the guys there, 2 years. But I'm really grateful to be asked today. It's actually nice to be sort of encouraged to go to a meeting, because I had made a commitment to do the chair, so I couldn't just change my mind. I'm not a big fan of online meetings, but that's just my thing. I like going to meetings. I like the people that I see there, and I kind of missed that this year. This year is the last 12 months or whatever have been tricky, you know, for a lot of us, because we can't go. So I really should be more grateful that we have online. But yeah, so anyway, I'm rambling there, but I'm 6 years sober. I got sober after a couple of years of just absolute insanity, just constant drinking, and then self-medicating through sedatives and things like that. And it got dangerous, you know. There's a lot of hospitalizations, the usual stuff that people in the rooms understand, you know. I don't need to go into all of the mental stuff that happened, but suffice to say, I couldn't not drink. You know, couldn't not drink. I had to drink all the time. I had to drug all the time, and I couldn't function without it, until I just couldn't function at all. So, you know, I lost my job. I ended up having seizures from trying to stop drinking myself. I couldn't get past a day without drinking, and I checked myself into to rehab then eventually. And I think what changed it for me is that my uncle, who was only a couple of years older than me, we were really close in age. He died in a relapse about 4 or 5 months before I got sober. And he'd been sober for about 2 years, and we all thought he was doing really well and looked really well and all that kind of thing. But he relapsed, and the night he relapsed, he died. And my drinking after that spiraled completely, because it scared me that this guy had died, but also I knew that I was just like him. And I kind of resigned myself to the fact that, okay, well, this is just going to kill me. I can't help it. I'm just going to keep going until I'm dead. And, you know, there'd be nights where I'd down a bottle of wine or two or three and sleeping tablets on top of it, and I'd think to myself, I might not wake up from this. But I had lost the ability to care about myself that way. I just couldn't stop. But October that year, something happened. I had a moment of clarity. People in the rooms call it that, what's that thing that they call it? I'm so long out of the religious meetings that I forget the words that they use, but it's like this kind of higher power thing that they say happens to them. But for me, it was just a moment of clarity where I was able to ring a rehab center and get myself in there ASAP. And I think if I hadn't done it at that moment, you know, a few hours might have passed and I would have just been like, oh, whatever, and I'd gone back to drinking. You know, there was no way I was going to hold on to that moment of clarity. But it got me in the door to a rehab centre in Mayo, the west of Ireland. And that was the start of sobriety for me. You know, And I was very reluctant when I got there because when I rang this place, I didn't realize it was run by nuns. And I'm very anti-nun and I don't like the church and I don't like any of that stuff. And I really am, you know, I recoil from all that kind of thing. But they were really nice and all that kind of stuff. But it was more the counselors that kept me there. Maybe particularly the counselor I got. He didn't insist on the big book. He didn't insist on the religious stuff. He didn't insist on the prayers or the meditation. I got the impression from him that he was probably quite, you know, atheistic himself, you know, but couldn't maybe say it in his professional environment. But it was much more rational conversation, logical conversation, talk of, you know, the brain and how it's hijacked in addiction and the science behind it and thing. And that's what I can relate to. That's what makes sense to me. So having somebody who could speak my language, who was also an addict, who had been sober and was also helping me try and get sober, all those things lined up for me. I ended up staying for 40 days and I went for 2 years weekly aftercare after that. And, you know, I did leave rehab and I left it feeling like, you know, I've got this and everything's going to be much easier from now on. And, you know, this is the biggest problem in my life and I'm solving it and this is fantastic. And there was kind of like a honeymoon period, probably for the first year, maybe a little bit less than a year, where I'd be going to meetings all the time, meeting all these people, it's all this coffee stuff and just kind of enjoying the freedom of not having to drink, because that is a huge weight that gets lifted off you, I think. And it was for me. But, you know, everything's sunny when you're sober initially. And of course, you know, life has its challenges, and I wasn't really tested in the first year. So I kind of thought, oh, I can do this. I can stay sober. I'm happy, you know, this is great and this is much better. But, you know, everyone has stuff that's going to happen in their lives, and they're what the triggers are. You know, that's what we call the triggers, or, you know, it could be a death. It could be an illness. It could be loads of different things. It could be financial difficulty, marital stress, loads of different things. And they're the things that test you. And of course, by year two, everything came back down to earth for me. And I had to face a lot of stuff that would be difficult for somebody who wasn't trying to stay sober. And it was just, some of it was just real life stuff, like, you know, struggling to pay bills and normal stuff like that, stresses. But there were some really big things that happened too. I ended up losing an organ in the second year. I have Crohn's disease, and part of the reason I initially started drinking and, you know, taking opiates and stuff was to pain relief, that kind of thing. But yeah, that was a big thing I wasn't dealing with. And partially because I was so locked up in drinking, I hadn't been treating the Crohn's disease the way, medically, properly. I hadn't been going to my appointments for years. I hadn't been, you know, maybe taking the medication I was supposed to take to keep my disease in some sort of check or stop it from progressing. So by the time year two came, my insides were really bad. And part of it wasn't my fault. It is a kind of genetic disease. But part of it was because I had neglected my body for so long. And that was a really hard reality check for me, that I felt like I hadn't had that many consequences for my drinking, except maybe just personally and for my own, just for me and my marriage. But this was the biggest consequence. And I kind of went into a depressive spiral then. A lot of self-hate and self-loathing and kicking myself. And why did you do this? And, you know, this is all your fault. And I ended up living with an ostomy bag. So I had all of that stuff as well, you know, to try and get used to. But one thing I didn't do is I didn't think about picking up a drink. And it's looking at it now, I'm thinking, okay, you know, I kicked myself around for a while about that. Undoubtedly, my addiction and my getting lost in addiction did play a big part in the deterioration of my disease. But at the same time, addiction is a disease as well. So there's only a certain level I can blame myself there too, you know. It's a tricky one. I've talked to counselors a lot about this, so it's a tricky one for me. Some days I feel really low about it, but I think actually I'm glad that the first year was so, you know, quote unquote easy, because it gave me some sort of solid foundation in sobriety. You know, a bit of a run in where thinking about drinking every day was no longer, you know, something I was just trying to get through. It was becoming more natural not to drink every day. So that big issue, you know, wasn't there anymore. I think if I had gotten really sick in my first year of sobriety, especially in the first early months, I'm not sure I would have been able to not pick up a drink, because I would have been too fresh, you know, from my last drink. So, you know, it's just funny when you look back and you think, okay, you know, I don't believe everything happens for a reason. I don't. I'm not one of those people, but I am very glad that it happened the way it did. So I got through that. There was loads of surgeries. There was all this stuff going on. And I just thought, okay, well, if that's the worst thing that happens, you know, keep going to your meetings, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, I ended up having a miscarriage. My husband and I have been married for 12 years and we've been trying for a long time. I think the drinking kind of got in the way of that, as you can imagine. And I'm also glad I didn't become a mother in my addiction. But it was a huge thing when I got pregnant. I was so happy. It was just, yay, finally. And that knocked me for six then, you know, losing the baby. And I ended up going back to the rehab center. At this stage, I was 4 years sober at this stage. I hadn't been there in a couple of years. But I went back and I said to the counselor I'd been with, like, why am I finding life so hard? You know, I've been sober a long time and I still fall apart when anything happens. You know, I feel so weak and just so, you know, is there something wrong with me as a person that I'm just weak, that anything that happens to me, I fall apart? You know, I used to fall apart into a bottle and now I'm just falling apart and I don't have any crutch and I don't know what to do with myself, you know. And he was great. He was really like logical about it. He knew a lot of my flaws and my character defects and all that stuff too. So he could point out the stuff that was irrational and I needed to work on, but he could also point out the fact that I was not just an addict, alcoholic trying to live. I was a human being and this was just normal reaction to loss and grief and all that kind of thing, and to go a little bit easier on myself. And that, you know, those are the first experiences I've had in recovery where you're talking to somebody who is balanced in how they approach you. I suppose in AA for the first couple of years that I was going, it was very militant, you know. It was very if anything goes wrong, it's because you're not working the book properly. It's because you're not praying. It's because you're not doing the things, you know. If you're unhappy, it's on you. There's something that's wrong with you or the way you're doing things. And you know, that does get absorbed, especially when you're young in the rooms. So there was something nice and balanced about, you know, being able to take accountability for your own bullshit, but also treat yourself as a human being. And I tried to, you know, when people came to me for help after that, I tried to balance it as well, you know, because it can be easy in the early days to mimic the hardliners and be like, you know, if you're struggling at the moment, it's because you're not handing over and you know, do all the same regurgitation of the same stuff. And it's not a very empathetic way of being. I think you can lose yourself in the whole I'm Kaylee, I'm an alcoholic, and forget that you're I'm Kaylee, I'm a human as well, you know. It's not all you are, and that was a big lesson for me. And it helped me not to drink that time, you know. It helped me not to drink, and I just kept going. And ever since then, I've seen myself more as a human than an alcoholic. I'm somebody who can't drink because I'm wired in a way that means that will just destroy my life. I can't drink like my next door neighbor can drink, who can have a few glasses of wine and be fine and have a giggle and be fine. I wish I could, just for the sake of normal social interactions, I wish I could, but I can't. It's not for me, you know. And I can't take drugs. I can't take certain prescription medication because like that, I can't stop. And there's never enough. And I, that feeling of sedation and that feeling of shutting my brain off becomes something that's nearly compulsive that I have to keep taking more and more, you know? So I know that about myself, but put all that aside, that being dealt with, I just want to live my life, you know? And I like not being totally identified as just an alcoholic, you know. There's no shame in being an alcoholic. I absolutely disagree with anybody who has something bad to say about somebody with an addiction. But it just labels somebody as one thing, you know, and I labeled myself as one thing for a long time too. And it's kind of freeing to remember that you're just one, it's just one of the flaw, or not even a flaw. A flaw seems so negative, but it's just something about me and my makeup, you know. Like I'm an impatient person. I'm lots of things that are bad, you know, and you can work on all of them. Anything destructive about yourself you can work on. So yeah, I mean, but after the miscarriage, like I said, that's when I felt like treating myself more as a human being who was dealing with a disease, say, you know, and doing really well at dealing with it. But I was getting very fed up with the God talk in the rooms, and I was connecting less in the rooms, and I just wasn't getting much from the meetings because it was all God stuff from the moment you walk in and the meeting actually opens. And it's, you know, most meetings in Ireland start with how it works. And, you know, that's, I don't know how many times God has mentioned that, but it's a lot. And, you know, the insistence on sponsorship and the insistence on praying and the praying at the end of the meeting, the praying at the beginning of the meeting, all of that stuff. And then people sharing, you know, sounding more like they're reading off a script. It just wasn't hitting me anymore. You know, I wasn't listening to people talk. Honestly, I was just listening to the same people talk about the same higher power stuff. And I kind of said to my husband, I think I'll leave AA. I'm fed up with it. You know, I've been going for months, the last few months, and I'm coming out mentally worse than when I went in. And, you know, it took me a while to figure out what it was exactly. And a lot of it was the God stuff. A lot of it was the higher power spirituality stuff. And my husband said, well, you know, maybe there's other people in AA like you. Don't give up on it. He didn't want me to give up on it because I'd done so well in it, you know, understandably he didn't want me sliding back. So I said, okay, well, look, I'll Google, I'll see, you know. And of course, there was nothing in Ireland. There was nothing in Ireland for atheists or agnostics or Muslims or, you know, there was just, it was all the same formula stuff. And I had no idea how I'd find even just an individual member who might feel like I did. You know, it's kind of something that I was afraid to bring up in the rooms because I didn't want to be admonished and told that, you know, read the chapter to the agnostics or something, you know, and I didn't want all that stuff, you know. So, but I found AA Beyond Belief, and that's run by a guy called John, and he is in Kansas, I think. And I just found this one night, and it was, he records podcasts with members of AA who are mostly agnostic atheist, you know, some have some sort of spirituality, some whatever, but mostly agnostic atheist. And he records their stories, and he records like the steps from the point of view of an agnostic or an atheist person and all this. And I think I spent like a whole night just going through months and months of podcasts and listening to them, and, you know, starting to feel very fond of the people in the podcast, even though I didn't know who they were. You know, feeling like, oh, I really like that Ben guy, you know, or, you know, I really just feeling like I used to feel in the meetings initially, you know, that feeling of belonging and understanding that person, and then knowing that they would understand me, you know. And I got into contact with them all, and I, you know, started talking to them on Facebook and got really involved with all that kind of thing. And eventually John asked me to do a podcast for him. I think it was the first Irish one. I think there's been a couple of Irish since then. And he encouraged me to set up a meeting in Ireland for atheists, basically. So that's what I did. You know, I set that up and then I did the podcast with him, and I met these amazing people in Ireland just from advertising it on that podcast. It was called The Freethinkers of AA. And I ended up like attracting these people who had been in AA for decades. Some of them had been openly atheist in the rooms for decades, and some of them hadn't. Some of them had never said it in a room, that actually I don't really believe in the God stuff, and they just sort of stayed quiet, didn't complain, you know, but been going for like 30 years to meetings and this grating on them, and you know, maybe not getting the whole thing. And we met up in Dublin for the first meeting, and it was absolutely packed. One of the members, his name is Brian, he's a guy in his, I think he's early 70s now actually, and he's sober a long time, and he's a counsellor, and he's in Dublin. He gave us his room, and I, you know, turned up. I was going to do chair the day, and you know, obviously I was organising it, so we were just going to see how many people turned up. And this room that might fit like 10 people, there were people out in the hall. We couldn't fit them all in, and it was just the most amazing feeling. And every single one of them was a member of AA for like, you know, 6 months or 40 years, you know, went from one extreme to the other. And every single one of them was agnostic at the very least, you know, but still managed to work a program maybe in a way that made sense to them, or stay, but most importantly, stay sober. That's the thing that matters most to me. And it was just the most liberating feeling. You know, it was just amazing. And I've met some of my closest friends through that particular, from that first day. And Annie, I think some of you know her. It turned out that there was a meeting in Dublin. And Annie will tell you herself, she wasn't very tech savvy, and she wasn't on the internet or anything like that. So it was hard to find them. It was kind of a word of mouth thing. So I found out that first day that there actually was a We Agnostics meeting in Molesworth Street, and this lady called Annie ran it. So I went along to that and ended up meeting all these other people as well. It was amazing. It was just, you know, I think one of the biggest conversations that I've taken from meetings like that is not that it's an us versus them kind of thing, but that there is actually room for everybody in AA, and that's not always the message you get in the traditional meeting. There is a kind of a feeling of, if you don't conform, you're going to die kind of thing. And it's a bit extreme. But I like the idea of there being an umbrella. The thing we have in common is that we can't drink normally. You know, that's the thing we have in common. Or, you know, we can't drug, or we loads of different things. Maybe we can't gamble, all that kind of stuff. Ultimately, addiction is the common ground, and everything else is just whatever, what is personal as far as I'm concerned. And I love it. I love the more open, welcoming feeling that I have gotten from, you know, more agnostic or free thinking meetings. And I think that's what kept me in AA, because I do think I would have gone otherwise. I don't think I would have stuck around. You know, I have really good friends from traditional meetings, but I still, even the ones I know really well since day one, I can't talk to them on the same level as I would in a free thinking meeting, you know. And it seems to be growing in this country, and we are Holy Catholic Ireland still, no matter what. So that's encouraging. But yeah, so as you know, anyway, lots of things have changed. I've had my child, who I've been waiting for a long time. I'm so grateful that I'm sober as a mom. You know, every day, actually, I think that comes into my mind, just that feeling of being present, and being reliable and focused on this other person. You know, I know what I was like in my addiction. There was no way I could have been the type of mother I am now, or the type of mother I would want to be, you know. And I'm grateful to myself. That sounds really, I don't know what the word is, but it sounds a bit off to say that, but I am actually grateful to myself, because I can't say I'm grateful to a higher power. I don't believe in any of that, but I'm grateful to myself for making the decision and sticking with it. And I'm really grateful for the support that I've had around me. You know, that's what I'm grateful for, you know, and I think a lot of people got me here. But ultimately it was me who stuck it out, you know, and there is power in that, you know, and I think you can come in and into the rooms and feel like you're nothing, but you're not nothing. If you're in the room, you've made a really good decision for yourself, you know, and that should be, you should commend yourself for that, and you should continue to do it, you know, treat yourself like you'd want to treat other, like you'd want other people to treat you, you know. A lot of it is being kind to yourself, and I know for me, caring for myself in addiction just wasn't even in my mind. So it's quite freeing. But thinking of drinking now, I don't know the last time I thought about it. Christmas wasn't hard, you know, all that kind of thing. That seemed impossible the first time, the first couple of years, that feeling, that loss of like missing out at Christmas and drinking, all that. It just doesn't even come into my mind now. It's such a natural thing not to drink. I could be in a room with a whole lot of people drinking. It just doesn't bother me, which is mad. You know, it's mad for an alcoholic to get to that point, I think. But it is brilliant. It does, for me, the addiction side of things, it does just keep getting better the longer you're around. But now, I suppose, my life is mostly focused on helping other people. I suppose when I was drinking and drugging, I couldn't focus on the underlying reasons and the underlying causes of why I was compulsively drinking. And one thing I've learned from my studies and from my work is that a lot of the times abuse and trauma is the root of addiction. And I work with a lot of people in addiction and out of addiction who are now working on their trauma and their underlying issues. For me, I could never have worked on that stuff until I got myself sober. You know, I couldn't have done the two simultaneously. It took a while. I had to get well so that I could deal with the real issues. Now I'm the head of child sex abuse at the Victims Alliance in Ireland. And we're like a lobbying group. We work on changing laws and holding certain people to account in our child services and things like that. And we do a lot of work on mother and baby homes and, you know, laundry survivors and church abuse survivors. Really, really tough stuff. And there are a lot of addicts in that. There are a lot of addicts in that. And trauma is the root for me. For a lot of people, trauma is the root. I can't say for everyone because I can't speak for everyone. But, you know, it's crazy. Since I started this job, and I made it public on my Facebook, and that the AA members that I've known since day one, I've had so many people contact me and say, you know what, I actually was abused as a child, or I have experience of this, or, you know, and they're starting to link that up, you know, to how they got into drinking so much and why it ended up being a band-aid. It's fascinating. It's really sad. We're a very traumatized country. We have quite a long way to go. It's not surprising that Ireland has such a high percentage of alcohol abuse. And that's kind of my goal. You know, I have a soft spot for the people who come to me looking for help who are also either in addiction or in recovery, because obviously, you know, I just understand them. I just feel so grateful to be in a position where I can be doing something positive. You know, I never would have gone down this line of work before. And I'm grateful I stuck with AA. I'm glad that I found the agnostic ones, you know, and I found people who could get sober, stay sober in AA without doing the stuff that you're told you have to do until you die, you know. It's just I think community for me is the biggest thing. You know, it's just talking to like-minded people, talking to people who are struggling or not struggling or who have struggled and can talk you through your struggle. There's something lovely about community, you know. And I think this is like it's like a help group nearly, isn't it? I don't know why AA works for me, because the big book just doesn't talk to me at all, but it's just people helping people, as far as I'm concerned. I think we have great power. I hope that most of that made sense, because I've kind of rambled a little bit there. And like I said, it's been a while since I did a chair or even talked to adults. I've been in for the whole lockdown, just been in a house with a 2-year-old. So I don't even know if any of that made sense. But I think I'll leave it there, because I could see myself rambling for a little bit too long. Is that all right?
Great stuff. Thank you so much, Kayla.